Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. That means the Mensa brothers will join me. get their thoughts on the election. Last week somebody sent me an article about Tom Friedman. Friedman, you know, saying that in his view, you know, America had a chance to send a message to the whole world about what we stand for. And Donald Trump embodied all the dark forces in the United States. And Joe Biden embodied the hope of everybody else that the United States could be what it used to be, or be the things that people look to the United States for. What happens if Tom Friedman's wrong? I mean, think about it. How does the mainstream media, for the second election in a row, 4 years later, how are you so out of touch with the nation that, you know, you watch some of them and their reaction the other night, and it was stunning to them as it happened. So what happened on election night, you know, for people? What happened? So you were offered competing views of the country, right? And so it's, you know, to me, I find this part, you know, fascinating. And here's what, you know, here's in all likelihood, you know, what we're headed for. Although I'm kind of curious, as somebody who was elected at, you know, and served as a local politician, you know, voting boards and things like that. I mean, those are important things. And so, so I have some questions about that. But anyway, it looks like where we're headed is that, first of all, 4 years later, right, no blue wave. In fact, the Democrats will lose seats in the House. Net in the House is going to be a Republican gain. Like, what? All those vulnerable senators, Republican senators, right, in which, what, something like, I think I saw that $300 million were contributed jointly to their defeat. Let me tell you, Mike Bloomberg is a loser, man. Everything that guy touches loses. Right? Everything he touches loses. He threw out, what, $100 million? right? Into Florida, into one state, into Florida. He threw more money into Texas. Again, my number might not be spot on, but anyway, so the Democrats will lose seats in the House. The Senate is more than likely going to be controlled by the Republicans. All right. And we will litigate. And here we will litigate about mail-in ballots. Were procedures followed? Yada, yada, yada. And so that will all be litigated and work its way out. My question is, relative to that, so there's a process that you're supposed to follow. There's observers there. You open the envelope. Is it a valid ballot or not? Right? The observers are there. And if it's valid, it goes into this pile. What happens if you don't do that? At some point, will a court decide that because you did not follow these rules that are set up for the election, that invalidates all those ballots? I don't know. And ultimately, might that be decided by the Supreme Court? And if that's the case, then the White House is still up for grabs. So, but that will all work itself out. So, but more than likely, what you're going to have is a slimmer margin of for the House. You're going to have the Senate in Republican hands, and you're going to have a Democratic president. Now, Wall Street loves that. What does that mean? Nobody's going left or right. There's going to be no sudden movements. So you will see, you know, Wall Street continue to rally. And so they love that. So that's Wall Street. What about our media? Stunned again that this happened. And so, as I was saying before, if you watch clips of them the other night, I mean they were this blue wave that their polls had told them that was going to happen, right? If you watch them, right, it was like, for those of you old enough to remember this, the robot in Lost in Space, when he didn't understand anything, his head would kind of move around and his arms would flap. And he would say, "This does not compute, Will Robinson. This does not compute." And you could see them, right? I saw one lament about going, you know, to the liquor store, right? And there's a guy named, what, Von Jones? Is that his name? On CNN. And he talked about, you know, this is devastating. The poll's not even close in many cases. Now, some were, a few were. Not many were, though. Now, just like in 2016, what you're going to hear in the aftermath is, well, we really were. Well, they really weren't. Because if they were spot on, right, then you would have seen anchors that were more prepared for what was going to happen. And for the second time in 4 years, they were blindsided and struggled throughout the course of the night to come up with some explanation. So our media, our pollsters are so out of touch with the country. So how do you make sense of it? How, you know, and again, I don't think anybody, not too many people rightly predicted this. I was curious about who would turn out to vote. Would it be more people in this blue wave? Or would it be people, I think, many of them under the center part of our political spectrum, who've watched what we've watched over the course of the last year, and that is the radicalization of the Democratic Party, the rioting throughout the nation, and said, look, you know, Donald Trump is a pretty flawed human being, right? but I don't want any part of that shit. Was that so hard to see? And I guess it was. So I saw an article, an opinion piece last week, and it stuck out in my head. And it is done by Gerard Baker, Jerry Baker, he goes by. And let me tell you who he is. And here's the headline. Trump is terribly flawed, but the alternative is simply terrible. Okay. He is the editor-at-large of the Wall Street Journal. His weekly column appears on the editorial page each Tuesday. It's called Free Expression. He's hosts a TV show on Fox Business Network called WSJ at Large with Jerry Baker. Previously served as editor-in-chief of the Journal and Dow Jones, which also publishes Barron's, I believe, from 2013 to 2018. Prior to that, he was the deputy editor-in-chief of the Journal from 2009 to 2013. He's been a journalist for more than 30 years, writing and broadcasting for some of the world's most famous news organizations, including his tenure at the Financial Times, the Times of London, and the BBC. He was educated at Corpus Christi College, Oxford University, where he graduated in 1983 with a first-class honors degree in philosophy, politics, and economics. Now, when you hear Corpus Christi College, right, most of us would think of Corpus Christi, Texas, right? Different place. All right. Different place. So if you do a quick search, Corpus Christi College of Oxford University, exactly, located in Headington or just outside Headington, England, right, where Oxford is located, and it is northwest of London. I don't know, maybe an hour or so. So, so that's where this guy comes from. So anyway, I think that his column that was published on the day of the election, I believe, is pretty representative of where much of the nation went. He writes, American democracy stands at a crossroad. One way lies renewal and recovery, salvation from the forces of darkness, a last-ditch affirmation that the U.S. can be redeemed after all. The other is a one-way path to perdition. Now, perdition, what does that mean? It's a word used in Christian theology, a state of eternal punishment and damnation into which a sinful and unpenitent person passes after death. Right? Hell, if you will. So you've heard that phrase, the road to perdition, the road to hell. The other is a one-way path to perdition, an accelerating descent into an abyssal underworld of misrule, repression, and corruption. We should expect this kind of absolutism from ideologues, especially on the left. As Americans choose their leaders for the next 4 years, radical Democrats and their vocal enablers in the media, in academia, and leading cultural institutions have never been more certain about anything in their lifetime of steadily diminishing intellectual curiosity. Yeah, this guy, I mean, obviously he's a smart dude, right? He's a smart dude. Yet, on the right, there's a growing tendency to narrow down a complex choice to simple verities. It would be nice to think that the world presents us with such simple choices, that the alternatives in life are clearly labeled good and evil. But those of us who graduated from kindergarten know that picking one from the other involves judgment, not revelation. Conservatives especially bring a little skepticism to the cartoonish morality tale that has debased our modern politics. We should vow to be a little bit more Melbourne, who he talks about in the start of the article, and a little less Macaulay. Now, Macaulay is this cocksure person that's sure of all things. Melbourne's a little bit more questioning, not as sure. And Melbourne muses that he wishes he could be more like Macaulay. Okay, so he tells that, but I don't want to read it. For the truth, the irony is that for all the absolute conviction that so many people bring to the choice in this election, only the intellectually or morally blindfolded could not be consumed by doubts about the truth. You don't have to believe a single word of the media's hysterical hyperbole about Donald Trump these last 4 years to think that this president is seriously lacking in the character of the men and women who have made this country the greatest nation on earth. You don't have to think he's Hitler's heir to be alarmed by his evidently cavalier disregard for small matters like the independence of the judiciary, the proper use of executive power, or the truth. You don't have to think he takes personal joy in incarcerating children in cages to worry that his underdeveloped capacity for human empathy has made him especially unfit for the crisis of the past year. You don't have to believe he's Bull Connor to worry that his rhetoric and manner have done harm to the nation's fragile social contract. Yet for all his faults, for all his legitimate fears stoked over the course of the last 4 years, it's not immoral or irrational to think that the incumbent still represents a better alternative to what's on offer. This is an improbable. Now, he writes this on Election Day. Yeah. He writes this on Election Day. This is an improbable but singular success in forging the basis of a new conservatism that has involved an economic record of tax cutting and deregulation that had begun to restore the nation's self-confidence and dynamism before the virus hit. A recasting of national interest that has made a decisive break with decades of futile international engagement and needless American sacrifice. A rebalancing of the judiciary towards a much-needed restraint up to and including the Supreme Court. It's about, above all, recognizing the alternative. Voters, after all, are not being asked to choose between Donald Trump and Abraham Lincoln. The alternative today is a candidate who sits vacantly smiling and slightly bewildered atop a party that, in its radical platform, its emerging leaders, and its ideological associations represent a sustained challenge to the shared ideals that have defined the United States throughout its history. The Democrats have spent 4 years falsely accusing their opponents of mounting a coup, but now threaten to assault many of the pillars of the constitutional order. They've spent the last 6 months conniving a brazen lawlessness and allying themselves with proponents of an ideology that rejects the nation's value, while compelling allegiance and silence to those who dissent. Their elevation of ideologies of race, gender, and other identity issues consciously pits Americans against one another in potentially ruinous ways. So admit it, it's not a rich choice. On one hand, a flawed man who may yet do more damage to the nation's frayed fabric. On the other hand, a party that seems committed to tearing it up. So this is why I'm going through this. Because to me, right, what I was most curious about, who would turn out? And for this quote-unquote silent majority that exists in this country, that has watched this narrative, have watched the events, be they COVID or the riots across the country, what did America think? And I have to say that I'm encouraged by the outcome. My thoughts before the election were, God help us if there is a blue wave. God help us if what the nation's appetite is more of Nancy Pelosi's vision. As cities burn across the country, the Speaker of the House says nothing about violence. More of Bernie Sanders, more of AOC, more of the government solving your problems. And then, just by the grace of God, I happened to, you know, watch Shelby Steele's What Killed Michael Steele. What Killed Michael Steele? What Killed Michael Brown? And I think the only conclusion is that the federal government convincing black people to move into high rises and that we will take care of you has been a half a century of a losing proposition. And at some point, somebody needs to look at anybody struggling in our country and said, hey, look, we're willing to help, but you are your own solution. And if you think that we're going to solve your problems, you don't know history. If you want to die in this ghetto, sign up for that program, because that's what's going to happen. And so what would the nation choose? What would the nation choose? He goes on, most readers of these pages will have made a reasoned judgment and decided the risk associated with four more years are worth taking given the alternative. But acknowledging the uncertainties associated is not only intellectually and morally mature, it will help us all learn to live with a result that so many will find unpalpable. And so, to me, he's come the closest, right? He's come the closest. And let me tell you, I will give you a thought that I don't know, most people probably wouldn't go near, but it's really interesting when you're around minorities, and you are certainly in the United States military. And you know, I've told this story before, but you know, when you're overseas, you got shit to do, right? But there's times when you're just sitting around doing nothing, and you begin to have conversations. And as a white guy, I didn't know of the animosity between the black and the, if you will, very broadly categorized, right, the Hispanic, the Latino community. I didn't know that. I didn't know they didn't like each other. Right? Now, since I've come to learn more about it, they're segregated in prison. Yeah, they don't, that shit doesn't happen. And, you know, you have very, very interesting views from the Hispanic community that, hey, we're here to work. And they don't believe that about the black community. All they do is talk shit. We work. And so you sit there, it's like watching a tennis match when this discussion goes on. And then, so anyway, so this, the president does better with Hispanic voters this time. So I don't think when you listen to his op-ed about an imperfect choice, but where do you go? And that to me was the most interesting part of this election. Where do you go? And what you saw in Texas was the Republicans held serve in spite of this, of huge amounts of money being thrown into Texas because the census has just happened. They will redraw district lines. Right. And so in the redrawing of district lines lies, right, the seeds of power. That's who's going to get reelected. And who controls that? Whoever controls the state legislature. So it was a big deal in Texas. So the thought is, if we could flip this thing to blue, we will control how we draw lines, which will sustain our power. That's how the shit works. So how would people vote? So the headline, Trump is terribly flawed, but the alternative is simply terrible. Now, let me tell you the good news about this. When you combine Joe Biden with a Republican Senate, you essentially take Joe Biden off Bernie Sanders and AOC's hook. Because the Senate will confirm, right? The Senate will stand as a roadblock to whatever increase in taxes. And that's why Wall Street is excited. And so we will have divided government, which means we ain't going left or right. But the next question is, how, for the second time, does the media get it so wrong? And so when you spend time, how does a guy like Tom Friedman not see what Jerry Baker sees? That it isn't a choice between black and white. And the reason Tom Friedman sees that is because he must have moved his home into the headquarters of the New York Times. Because if you get out to the center part of the country, if you interact with those people, if you meet them, you know what you find out? They're great people. They're great small town people. They open up their homes. They open up their community to anybody. They're not racist. They do believe in, they're responsible for themselves. They're not looking for the government to come solve their problems. They will help anybody. And I mean, I've seen it. I don't care if your car's in the ditch in the winter, in the snow. They pull their pickups off over to the side and they'll pull your ass out. If you need a ride down the road to a gas station or what, they'll take you down there too. It is the highest quality of life in this nation. And the people who sit in their perches for the second straight election, and the narrative is the same though. They don't know the country. They believe that what happens in Manhattan, in Los Angeles, and the different media centers, they believe that's reality. And if you're a conservative, what you've seen is that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, has somehow stuck his hand out to the minority community. Numbers of black men that supported, right, Republicans increased. Same thing with Hispanics. Donna Shalala was defeated. By a Latina. Yeah. Donna Shalala. Holy shit, right? How did that happen? So, again, no blue wave. The Democrat, I mean, if you could imagine this, imagine Nancy Pelosi. What is she, you know, what is she thinking? Here she's been at war with Donald Trump, right, for 4 years, and now the election's coming, and, you know, we're going to increase seats in the House, and well, and they lose seats in the House. They don't take back the Senate. Those incumbent senators win by double digits. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I think, what did I read? That Mitch McConnell's opponent raised $90 million? Let me see if I can. Yeah. ditch Mitch. Amy McGrath, former Marine, pilot, combat veteran. The I want to say that I read that she had raised $90 million. Let's see. Here's a story from Kentucky. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, McGrath brought in $46 million, in which almost which is $10 million more than McConnell. How about that? 96.9% of McGrath's campaign donations have come from outside of Kentucky, with folks associated with the University of California at the top of her 20 contributors. How about that? Harvard, Stanford, and the University of Kentucky are in the top 20 as well. McConnell accepted 91% of his campaign money from out of state. Yeah. So anyway, I just find as you sit here on the backside and you begin to ponder, you know, what did the election mean? You know, you have a stunned media. You have polls that weren't even close. You have a reversal of what was supposed to happen in the House. You have the damage done so far in the Senate to be, what, the net loss of one seat? They barely held on to the seat in Michigan. And then you have a runoff in Georgia, one runoff. And so, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. But again, a stunned media and the hurt voices of we did not repudiate this in the stark choice that Tom Friedman laid out. That there's a white road and a black road. And what Jerry Baker says is, it's not that simple. The white road, right? I got to walk down the white road with Bernie Sanders, with AOC, with the squad. And my belief, when I walk down the white road with those people, when I walk down it with CNN and MSNBC, that's what I want for the future of the country. All of which didn't seem to have too much of a problem with our cities burning this summer. None of which came out and condemned that stuff. That's the road I want to talk, that Tom Friedman believes is the glory road that we should walk down. And I think Jerry Baker said, nah, you know, I don't buy it like that. I think there's between black and white, there's probably a couple of gray roads. And it looks to me, right, more people signed up for Jerry Baker's view of what the nation is, that this nation is fundamentally good. We fought a war against slavery to unite our nation, right? The ideas of freedom around the world come chiefly from the United States of America. Now, again, the problem with history is that it's a slowly evolving masterpiece, a slowly evolving work of art. But again, and this is the problem that we have in this country. The idea that this country is systemically racist is a joke. Are there racists in our country? Yes. Do people experience episodic racism? Yes. Without a doubt. And that happens everywhere on the planet. So at the end of the day, I believe the story coming out of the election is the number of people, given all of Donald Trump's warts, that said that is a better view of the nation than that, which, given the volume and the pitch, right, of this past summer, really is astounding. And I think if you're a conservative, how could you not be absolutely excited? How could you not be absolutely excited if you were a conservative? And so what does that mean? You know, if you see, you know, Democratic or Republican organizers, what do they say? We had more women. We had more diversity in our tickets across the country. And we believe that that was a huge part, that the Republican Party will be more diverse, will be more female than ever before. So, but again, one of the things that Jerry Baker says in his piece that he wrote, and again, I'll put the link into the first hour so you can read it. Again, the head is, Trump is terribly flawed, but the alternative is simply terrible. Now, the alternative is rescued by the Senate. So Joe Biden, right, can if he's elected president, if all that works out, I mean, he's rescued from Bernie Sanders by a Republican Senate, and he can govern, I think, as he's been throughout most of his life, which is by as a moderate Democrat. Right? So he's rescued by that. So this sentence, though, as Americans choose their leaders for the next 4 years, radical Democrats and their vocal enablers in the media, academia, and leading cultural institutions have never been more certain about anything in their lifetime. In their lifetimes of diminishing intellectual curiosity. And that diminishing intellectual curiosity is why they don't know the country. Is why they write the country off as a bunch of rubes, a bunch of idiots, a bunch of racists. And they don't know them. And then what they do is they form their opinions based on the stupid shit we see on the nightly shit shows of our news, which puts on display the worst examples of what it is to be an American, both as a liberal and a conservative. But most of us aren't in either one of those places. Most of us are more towards the center. My friends, I would tell you, fiscally conservative, right? But socially liberal, in terms of they believe in helping anybody who needs help. Hell, we fought for that idea. Put racism in front of my friends and watch what they do to it. They would annihilate it. They've never stood for that shit in their lives. Conversely, the people I know that are Democrats, right, are on the other side of that line, but not by much. And that's the majority of people I know. They hate Donald Trump. They think he's a piece of shit. Okay, I got the memo on that. Okay. I don't disagree. He has many piece of shit like qualities. Okay. But let's get beyond that. Let's talk about policies. And quickly you find that you have more in common than you do that differentiates you. And you can close the things that differentiate you. You can close the gap on that. And on immigration. You know, I was talking to my oldest daughter, Catherine, and we're talking about immigration. I said, well, how about this, right? If you came into this country illegally, you plead guilty to a whatever, class A misdemeanor, blah, 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 blah. You cannot be a citizen, but you can have permanent legal status or something like that. But keep your nose clean, any felonies, and you'll be deported. All right? If you're the child of one of those people, this is the path to freedom. This is a path to citizenship. You didn't do anything wrong. You were born here. Here's your path to legal citizenship in this country. And I looked at her and I said, how about that? We're not going to deport 11 million people. Stupid. We need to deal with this, right? Secure the border and then move on. I said, does that make sense? And my daughter, who wants to believe she's a liberal, but she's inquisitive, to her credit. She reads. She and I are going to watch Shelby Steele together at some point this weekend. She said, yeah. She said, that's reasonable to me. And so I thought Jerry Baker's, his opinion piece, his column in the journal was spot on. And so anyway, as the nation begins to count votes, I'm most curious about, everybody got mailed a ballot because of COVID, right? You don't think there was some politics that went with that, right? So what happens if you don't follow the appropriate procedures and you unpack that thing, you don't verify the signature, blah, 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 blah. So we recount all of those votes, all those mail-in votes, and we have to validate them. And if we can't validate a mail-in vote, what do we do? Is it excluded? Does that change the outcome of the election? So, most states are pretty deliberate when it comes to, in fact, I was just listening to a press conference earlier today. I don't know, he's the chief operations officer, something for elections in Georgia. And he was talking about a county that had instead of having one kind of department that does elections, they have two. I went, huh? And he said, the first department deals with the validation of votes. And I thought, oh, that's pretty smart. He says they have nothing to do with the tabulation. All they do is they validate the vote. I thought, well, there you go. And then we saw scenes yesterday, right? Where election observers, and they're supposed to be from both parties, get told that you got to be 60 feet away. Well, what am I observing then? Nothing. And then the other thing you saw is people putting, right, in a democracy, people putting, blocking, windows so that nobody could see them. And their supervisors allowing that. And I just thought, good Lord, man. Do they not understand the optics of that? How horrible it looks to the rest of the country, no matter what. And you're sitting there watching the shit show, and then you got Rudy Giuliani on, and and he said something, in my opinion, that was absolutely true. 100 years of one party rule. Yeah, you don't even want to start flipping over those rocks. You want to talk about corruption? You want to talk about nepotism? Have the same party in power for, 60, 70 years and watch what you get. But it's true. And, I say consistently that I don't believe in coincidences. The Iraqis, cured me of that. And I don't believe in coincidences. So to me, we will now get to the part of the election where we scrutinize it. And we'll either be made to feel good about it, or we will see its warts, and we will see if there's remedies for the warts. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But Joe Biden, stands at 264? And Nevada at some point going to come in today? And so anyway, interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. So the Mensa brothers are going to join me here in a few minutes. We'll check the news. And again, what's to me interesting is, guys like Tom Friedman. How does Friedman miss the pulse of the nation by so much? How does Friedman say that if you vote for that which Jerry Baker said is the better choice, right? Friedman says that we disgrace ourselves as Americans. How is Friedman that out of touch of mainstream America? That he's lived in that media vacuum for so long that he doesn't get what Jerry Baker gets? Tom, you got to move your office to Kansas City. Move it to Minneapolis. And then get in your vehicle and go do shit on the weekends and meet all the great people that live in this country. And you're going to find what everybody finds. They're not racist. They're great people. They view they don't look to the government to solve their problems, though. And you might want to get to know them. And once you get to know them, you're going to see that their concerns are legitimate. So, good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps band makes it official. And this is dedicated to intellectual curiosity. I hope more people display it. You know, start subscribing to liberals who you know to be articulate, you know, well-read, you know, people. And consider what they have to say. And participate in that discussion. Be intellectually curious. And your intake valve, right, should be relatively broad, right? Start with Glenn Greenwald, right? Start with Barry Weiss and people that have lent their voices, right? Have lent their liberal voices to a balanced view of this country. So, and this is dedicated to intellectual curiosity.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. <clears throat> but I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. So, young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Currently in Quantico, it is sunny in 64. Down the coast at Camp Lejeune, it is partly sunny in 74. Marine Corps Base 29 Palms, partly sunny 75. Camp Pendleton, partly sunny 78. Did I read that right? Camp Smith in Hawaii, partly sunny in 73. Okinawa, Shima, dark cloudy in 76. In Darwin, it is clear, dark, and 83, so Darwin's warmed up. And in Norway, only one weather alert today. Cloudy, dark, and 51 in Norway. Currently in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, partly cloudy, 65 degrees. Looking for a high of 86 today. What? Yeah, 86 degrees. Well, that's what we're looking at. And then tomorrow, down to 72, and then rain in the weekend, 62, 61, 63 on Monday. So maybe winter is arriving. That is a look at your weather. I have my call for a Zoom call to be a big brother. And I'm excited about it. I don't know if I'll ultimately, do I fit their mold or whatever? I hope I do. But I mean, I have my daughter every other week, and I have the time to be a mentor to somebody. So I'm actually excited about it. So we'll see where that goes today. So it should be interesting. I'll report back because I'm sure there's others out there like me that have some time. And and to me, I mean, this seed gets planted in my head, like, well, what could I do? And I think what would excite me the most would be, to be a mentor for, anybody. But in my mind, it would be a minority youth, right? And I mean, I can show you the path. I can show you the path to be successful. And so I'm excited about that today. Also, I head down to Camp Pendleton later today. I'll do post-traumatic winning tomorrow. So I'll record the show for tomorrow, early tomorrow morning. And so we'll be on. Greg Lotus will join me. And then I'll do post-traumatic winning a couple times tomorrow. I'm really excited. Talked to the commanding officer where I'm headed, and he's fired about it. He's seen it a couple times, and he's been through some stuff in his own life. It should be very cool, and should be very cool. I'm fired up about tomorrow. So anyway. Motivating couple of days. We'll take a quick break. Well, maybe we won't. We won't take a break. Let me do some news headlines real quick, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll get the Mensa brothers here. Stars and Stripes. Biden pushes closer to victory in race for the White House. Next headline. Proposed troop drawdown in Germany complicates plan to hand back military land. There's a murder story coming out of Fort Hood. A couple of them. And so that story's updated. Navy's football game against Tulsa is postponed as coronavirus is loose at the Naval Academy. Insurgent attacks jeopardize peace efforts and the U.S. troop withdrawal in Afghanistan, according to our watchdog agency in Afghanistan. Headline, amid pandemic, Marine Corps plans unconventional celebrations for its 245th birthday. Ceremonies will be viewed on computers, TVs, and smartphones as the Marine Corps puts public health ahead of its traditional Marine Corps balls for its 245th birthday coming this Tuesday, which is sad because Marine Corps ball is a pretty good time. Marine Corps ball is pretty good time. A North Korean intruder under questioning as South Korea eyes its own border security. So that in the news. Top story in Wall Street Journal today is the election comes down to a few states as voting, as vote counting continues. So Georgia, 99% of the total vote. Donald Trump has a 14,000 vote lead in Georgia. North Carolina with 94% of the vote. Donald Trump has a 80,000 vote lead. Pennsylvania with 87% of the vote. Donald Trump has a 120,000 vote lead. And in Nevada, with 75% of the vote, Joe Biden has an 7,600 vote lead. And Arizona, which has already been called, that is about 70,000 votes separating them with 88% of the expected. And again, that 88% number, that's expected. So the number could be higher than that or lower based on actual turnout. So that's from the Wall Street Journal. Let's see. Senate hinges on four uncalled races with the GOP holding the edge. So the Senate, the GOP holds the edge in Georgia, North Carolina, and there's going to have to be a runoff in Georgia. And that'll be one of the most expensive Senate races ever, the runoff in Georgia. So, the Republicans held a 53-47 advantage in the Senate. On Tuesday, Democratic Governor John Hickenlooper unseated incumbent GOP Senator Cory Gardner in Colorado. Mark Kelly beat Martha McSally. Gary Peters won re-election, barely in Michigan over a guy named John James, a veteran. So that produces a net gain of one. In Alaska, Dan Sullivan is ahead, expected to win. And then there's races in North Carolina and the two in Georgia that I mentioned. So the Republicans are expected, right, to win with then the runoff coming in Georgia, I believe in January. So that news from the Wall Street Journal. Story, Latino voters drifted from Democrats in Florida and Texas. Why is that? Read Jerry Baker, and I think you get your answer to that. Right. And again, think about that. The tsunami, right? The tsunami that was you know, in the news leading up to the election. Pretty amazing stuff. A $600 million maritime drone sale to Taiwan has been approved by the State Department. Beijing complains. You know what? Thank God, man. Thank God. You know, we're all going to stand there and watch, you know, how many 18 million people in Taiwan that don't want any part of mainland China, you know, be devoured because we're afraid that it'll screw up our economic relationship with the Chinese. Here's an interesting story. After 9 months of study, Pentagon's fleet architecture similar to Navy's original plan. And former Secretary Motley said that. Real quick, top stories in Marine Corps Times. Nothing really new in Marine Corps Times. Top five stories in Early Bird, and then we'll take a break. We'll get everybody on, and then we'll talk about the election. I'm going to make them consultants for both parties, see what they have to say. Top story in Early Bird, number one, there are still tens of thousands of military absentee ballots yet to be counted. Interesting. Might they have an impact on some of these races? Number two, as ballot count continues, National Guard still activated in 10 states for possible civil unrest. Haven't seen it other than a few, you know, idiots being arrested. Haven't seen it. Number three, armed services committees and the election. Here's what we know. A major shakeup for the Senate Armed Service Committee has yet to materialize. So, yeah, with most of the incumbents winning, not going to happen. Number four, insurgent attacks soar in Afghanistan. Like, what is going on there? Why? Number five, ninth U.S. service member killed by COVID. Reservist or active duty? Remember, only one active duty service member has been killed. A ninth U.S. service member killed by coronavirus, according to Pentagon data released on Wednesday. Service member was a Texas Air National Guardsman. So that story continues to hold. Only one active duty service member has been killed by COVID. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, the Mensa brothers will join me. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it on a Thursday, the All Warrior Radio Network.